Businesses have a responsibility throughout their entire value chains to respect human rights. If you can apply pressure at the top of the supply chain strategically, then you can achieve change at the bottom.
You are listening to Radio Atticus,
your national program on the law in the name of social justice.
This is obviously a live issue, and we need to start to talk about how we might regulate it here so that we aren't outsourcing our problems.
People are curious. They look at you and they want to know your story.
Radio Atticus, more than the vibe. Hello and welcome to Radio Atticus, your national program on social justice, the law, and how it interacts with your daily lives. I'm Anne-Marie Reyes and will join you in this journey as your host. Radio Atticus is broadcast nationally through the Community Radio Network and produced in the studios of Radio 2SER. In this edition, Refugee Week is held yearly all around Australia, and this year is no different. The only marked difference is as the refugee problem further erupts in many flashpoints around the world, most governments are closing their doors to refugees. In Australia, we continue to grapple with our policy having serious impacts on the health and well-being of refugees and asylum seekers who continue to be detained in Nauru and Manus Island offshore detention centres. But before this story, let's hear about what's been happening with the communities being affected by the threats to community legal support around the country due to the withdrawal of community legal centres funding. Despite the sudden backflip by the federal government in its plan to withdraw funding, there are services that will still suffer, like the Youth Law Centre in Western Australia. Reporter Sophia Carvajal has more.
Hundreds of young people are at risk of being left unsupported if the only youth centre for free legal advice in Western Australia closes its doors. The Youth Legal Service in Perth and Community Legal Centres, or CLCs, across Australia were earmarked for a 30% funding cut from July 1. The federal government has backflipped on the funding cuts, but it may be too little too late for the Perth Centre, according to Cheryl Cassidy-Vernon, its director.
We have a young woman who's come from the most horrific family situation and been placed in a number of different foster arrangements that never worked, and then continually put back into the family situation where the violence just kept going, even though the perpetrators were changing as mum's partners changed. The type of person that mum was partnering with is very similar to the previous one, so lots and lots of violence, and that helping that young woman to get some compensation so that she could actually get treatment for the long-term impacts that exposure to violence has had on her life. She's at a stage now where she's had a child herself and that child has been taken into care. We've got the application in and an allocation has been made to her so that she can now move on with her life. So there's great therapeutic value in the award being made, not only because it's a financial award that helps pay for ongoing treatment, but also in acknowledging that, you know, what was done to her was not right. She's working through a process now. She has re-established visitation with her child and hopefully moving towards reunification with her child once she's a little bit more in a better space where she can be a stronger parent. I mean, every day we have those kinds of cases coming to us. They're endless. What has been really difficult over the last year with funding cuts and, you know, the threat of more funding cuts is not being able to provide the level of support and legal assistance to young people and with that kind of story. We've gone from 12 staff down to 2.3 staff now. So, you know, we're really at bare bones at the moment just to ride out this financial year so that we can hopefully preserve something of the service in the future. The Youth Legal Service operates in Western Australia, providing a statewide legal advice line to young people under 25 years of age. We also provide a legal representation service in the Perth metropolitan area, community legal education and policy and law reform initiatives around the impact of law on young people.
I grew up in Perth, and it was at the time it was described as the most isolated city in the world, and it sure felt like it. So have things changed just to set the just to describe Perth to people who haven't been there?
Well, it's a city that went through a very vibrant period recently, and then there's been the downturn as the bottom fell out of the mining industry. There's huge geographical distances that we reach out to and provide services to.
Do you go out to regional centres as well, or is there one branch in the middle of Perth?
Well, we do try to get out to regional centres. We try to do two regional tours a year. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to do that in this current financial year because of the funding constraints that we've been under.
So does that include Aboriginal communities?
Sure, it certainly does. And I've had the privilege over the many years I've been here to do quite a lot of work in the Pilbara and particularly the East Kimberley area. When the federal government announced it was going to be a 30% cut as of the 1st of July going forward, we had to put in place some procedures to deal with that. So in that process, we've had to make positions redundant. You know, what happens if we've lost some really good staff that had a unique skill set that could assist young people in the most dire circumstances.
The government announced a backflip recently and is going to restore the 30% of funding, but your doors are still going to close.
Well, that's not necessarily the case. At this stage, we're still in a state of flux because yesterday we got notified from the state government that they're going to restore some of the funding that we'd lost. So it's looking a bit more hopeful for us. But of course, that's still not certain yet. And, you know, it's still a bit of a gamble, I guess, as to whether we will or won't be open on the 30th of June. Yeah. Well, we're hoping early next week to have some idea of the quantum of this new funding. They may not be able to meet that deadline, but we really need to know as soon as possible because we have obviously started down the process of dissolution. A decision was made with the membership of Youth Legal Service last week that if we don't have this funding shored up, that the service will close on the 30th of June. So what we would have then is a situation where young people will not have services available to them. So they're going to be left to fend for themselves in court, which could mean that there is a very high risk of injustice, and inevitably over time I'm sure there will be a clogging of court lists.
What motivates you to actually keep working there with all the difficulties going on there at the moment?
I guess, you know, for us it's the passionate belief in what we do and, you know, the years of experience where we've been able to turn young people's lives around and get them, you know, on a positive pathway, making a positive contribution to society rather than being a burden on society. Cutting funding from services that are already underfunded is probably, I suppose, easy pickings, and that's not when we're talking about the most vulnerable people in that community. That is just, to to me is not a very civilised way of going about administering our country. You know, we've got so many projects and ideas that we'd like to implement. Yeah. Obviously, the possibilities of the service are endless. You know, I mean, ideally, we'd love every young person in our state to be able to undergo some of our education programs, and that so that they learn more about the laws and why laws are set up in the way that they do to protect them and to protect the rest of the community.
That was Cheryl Cassidy Vernon, the Director of the Youth Legal Service in WA. At the date of this podcast, the Youth Legal Service is still running, so you can go to their website if you need any free legal advice if you're under 25. The address is www.youthlegalserviceinc.com.au.
Radio Atticus's Sophia Carvajal there with that report. You're listening to Radio Atticus, broadcast nationally to the Community Radio Network and produced in the studios of Radio 2SER. I'm Anna-Marie Reyes.
I'm Michael Kirby, and you are listening to Radio Atticus. Radio Atticus is part of the Community Radio Network. I was formerly a Justice of the High Court of Australia with no time to listen to this, but now I sit glued to Radio Atticus.
Luminous, furious and wildly inventive, Colson Whitehead's 2017 Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Underground Railroad, has been lauded by Barack Obama and Oprah Winfrey. Join Colson at Sydney Writers' Festival as he sits down with New York Times book review editor Pamela Paul to discuss his imaginative exploration of the foundational sins of America. May 27, City Recital Hall. Tickets on sale at swf.org.au. Sydney Writers' Festival, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
the last 12 months, the political climate towards refugees and immigration has generally hardened. Anti-refugee, anti-immigration sentiment seems to have taken hold globally, highlighting the election of Donald Trump and his blatantly racist policies, the rise of far-right nationalist parties in Europe, and the re-emergence of One Nation in Australia. For the people still held in Australian offshore processing centres on Manus Island and Nauru, this creates greater uncertainty as chances of the US refugee resettlement deal begins to be diminished. Vanessa Powell reports.
On the Sunday before Easter, thousands of people came together to protest for refugee rights as part of annual Palm Sunday rallies held in capital cities across the country. Palm Sunday is just one event in the growing refugee rights movement, not just in Australia, but also globally. The conflict in Syria has been one of the key drivers for migration, particularly into Europe in the recent years, where an estimated 4.8 million people have fled. Yet the relationship between conflict and refugees is still not acknowledged, with many countries closing up borders as conflict persists. Sue Wareham from the Medical Association for the Prevention of War explains.
MAPW is concerned with the victims of warfare, and we know that most of the victims of modern war are in fact civilians, and a lot of them are refugees, people who need to flee their homes, either move somewhere else within their own country or try to find safety in another country. So we're deeply concerned that the Australian government is very ready to go to war currently in the Middle East, but the Australian government has quite shameful policies in relation to looking after the victims of warfare. We know that when countries go to war, one of the methods of warfare is aerial bombing, which creates terror for those who are below. And even in street-to-street fighting, no matter what the method of warfare is, there are civilians caught up in it, and innocent people have to flee. If they want to be kept safe, they need to flee and they need to take their families and try to find a safe place. So the issue of refugees is intimately connected with the issue of warfare, and if we want to reduce the global crisis in numbers of refugees, then we really need to find other ways of addressing conflict other than warfare. And Australia is very much a part of the problem in this, unfortunately, because Australia virtually joins every major US war. We've joined every major US war since World War II, and we know that the numbers of refugees currently are at unprecedented levels, and significantly as a result of all the wars in the Middle East. The refugees from Afghanistan, Syria, Somalia, in Africa. Refugees from these places are in huge and unprecedented numbers, and significantly because of the wars that are occurring. So if we want to reduce the number of refugees, then we've got to find other ways of addressing conflict other than bombing and other forms of warfare.
As a doctor, it must be concerning that we've had an asylum seeker die of medical neglect?
Yes, it is. As a member of the health professions, we obviously try to ensure that everybody has their health needs met, regardless of background or race or religion or any other factor. They're all irrelevant in the healthcare system. And yet what we see is that the refugees seem to be receiving a standard of treatment which is not as good as people in Australia would receive. And that's simply not good enough. We need all people who are under our care to be receiving the best possible medical care. And it is distressing that people have died in refugee detention from preventable conditions.
I'm Anne-Marie Whelan. I'm from the New South Wales Nurses and Midwives Association. I'm here for the refugee rally, the Palm Sunday rally, to show support both from myself personally and from the Nurses and Midwives Association, which is a union for nurses. Our members are here also from different hospitals, also showing support for refugees. These people are perhaps the worst when it comes to having their rights denied above and beyond anybody else. They have a right to seek asylum. When they're designated refugees, they should be accommodated here in Australia. It's big enough. There is enough space. And they've demonstrated over the years that people who've come as refugees have always been productive.
Father Claude Mostovic. I'm the president of Pax Christi Australia, which is international, part of an international Catholic peace movement, and also work with Catholic Ridges Australia and also the Edmund Rice Centre. I suppose it's becoming a bit of a habit, but I've been coming for many, many years, and I've been involved with refugees for over 40 years. And in my experience, the treatment of these people who've come to this land is getting worse and worse and worse. And I just think it's just so wrong that we treat people so badly who we must take responsibility for in terms of, you know, we've invaded some of these countries or attacked these countries like Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria now as well. And we are causing these problems for these people. And when they escape the death and destruction and all kinds of violence, we're not ready to help them.
I'm very concerned about refugees. They are fleeing from conflict zones. They are definitely fleeing for their lives. Some sectors of Australian society have a fear of Islam and a fear of Muslims. I agree that we need to support Muslim reformers who are looking to strengthen human rights in Islam, but refugees are innocent people. We have signed the 1951 Refugee Convention, and it's a basic Western concept of democracy that we need to protect people who are fleeing for their lives.
For refugees and asylum seekers still on Manus and Nauru, they are now going into their fifth year in limbo. Offshore processing has already cost the lives of five asylum seekers. Reza Barati, Hamid Kazai, Kamil Hussein and Faisal Ishak Ahmed, who died on Christmas Eve after the failure to provide him with proper medical care. Last year, Amit Masumali died by self-immolation after losing all hope on Nauru. But all may not be lost. Ian Rintoul from the Refugee Action Coalition.
Well, the only hope is in the campaign, really. And I think there is there's a strong campaign which is going to continue to fight to bring them here, to close the camps on Nauru and Manus Island and bring all the people from Manus Island to Nauru. Because even on the government's own figures, even if the US deal goes ahead with every dotted I and crossed T, there will be hundreds of people who are going to be left behind on Manus Island, you know, and Nauru. Malcolm Turnbull actually says there's a US deal. There are so many uncertainties surrounding the US deal that people on Nauru have already been waiting 5 months since their first interviews. There's no timeline about when people might be finally be resettled. And at the moment, the abuses, the medical problems, dengue fever is sweeping Nauru, for example. There are signs that the US deal will go ahead in some fashion. They've interviewed about 300 people on Manus Island. They've interviewed about 600 on Nauru. They have taken the fingerprints of those people. But as I said, the people on Nauru have been waiting 5 months since they had the interview. There's no sign of their second interview. There is no timeline for when they might be resettled. So even if it goes ahead in some fashion, and we can't give any guarantee at the moment that it will, we know that hundreds of people will be left behind.
And my last question is, there's still thousands of people in onshore detention centres, so are these people being forgotten?
I don't think they're being forgotten. I mean, obviously there's a huge focus about onshore detention, and there are issues that we constantly try to raise and to remind people that there are Syrians, for example, in detention in Australia on Manus Island and on Nauru. There are people who are long-term detainees, people who are being re-detained in the detention centres, and it's very important we continue to raise not just offshore processing but mandatory detention, the indefinite detention in Australia. And in particular, there are thousands of people who are in the community now who have been invited to apply for protection but who've been denied legal aid. The domestic policies, the Australia policy, in-country policies, if you like, also have to be opposed along with offshore processing.
Ian Rintoul there, who was also joined by Father Claude Mostowick from Pax Christi, and also Alexander McRae at the Palm Sunday rally in Sydney, ending that report by Vanessa Powell. You're listening to Radio Atticus, broadcast nationally to the Community Radio Network and produced in the studios of Radio 2SER. I'm Anne-Marie Reyes.
Well, I'm Gillian Triggs, and for legal news, facts and opinion, listen to Radio Atticus on 2SER.
UTS is number one again, ranked as Australia's number one young university for the third year in a row. Our students agree.
UTS is such a young and energetic university. It's encouraged me to consider new paths to be ready for my industry. I think UTS has a creative and entrepreneurial approach to learning that other unis don't have, and this will make such a difference to my future study and career.
Join us for a course info evening. To learn more, go online and search UTS Course Info Night. UTS, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
A shout out to all our listeners around the country, 2Bob FM in Taree, New South Wales, 7RPH in Hobart, Tasmania, 8CCC in Alice Springs, 4NSA at Noosa Heads in Queensland, and more. Thank you for your ongoing support. Radio Atticus has been with you since 2009, and we continue to power on because of you.
Being injured in an accident can have a real impact on you financially. Injuries can mean time off work, medical bills and other expenses. But you might actually be entitled to compensation to cover these expenses. If you're unsure, call a specialist injury lawyer and ask. Law Partners is Australia's largest specialist personal injury firm, and it costs nothing to call their local office to get some advice. Call Law Partners on 133 529 or visit lawpartners.com.au.
2SER sponsors.
So what's happening this week?
Have you ever seen laser beams in the sky?
What were you thinking?
I find an opportunity to lick Richard Wilkins.
Okay.
Interviews and discussions and all sorts of interesting things. 107.3.
2SER.
And that's about all we have time for in this week's program. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you want more, why not check out our podcast on www.2ser.com/Radio Atticus. Radio Atticus is broadcast nationally through the Community Radio Network and produced in the studios of Radio 2SER. I'm Anne-Marie Reyes. Until our next broadcast, see you then.